Today's Daily DVR is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Cufflinks.com wants to encourage you to elevate your look when you get dressed in the morning. Hey, hopefully you took advantage of that party-ready stud sale last weekend, because that's over. But we're back to telling you about the Disney sale, so I do want to remind you, you want to look confident. You want to create your individual look. That's what it's all about, baby. So stand out. Go to cufflinks.com. Use code Disney30 to get 30% off of all Disney products for the whole month of November. It's Mickey Mouse's birthday, November 18th. It's coming up. It's coming up, people. Next week, Mickey Mouse will be 90. Can you believe that? Use code Disney30 to get 30% off of all products, whether it's cufflinks, tie bars, stud sets, ties, bracelets, pocket squares, lapel pins, messenger bags, and totes. Go on over to cufflinks.com, check them out, get them all emblazoned with your favorite TV show or movie like Game of Thrones, Star Wars, Marvel, DC Comics, all the sports, NCAA, NBA, NFL. It's all there. It's all awesome. Check it out. Cufflinks.com. Use code Disney30. Do it this month. November. Mickey's 90, baby. Cufflinks.com. Yeah. Now on to the show. Today is Monday, November 12th, 2018, and this is Daily DVR. Welcome back, everyone, to Daily DVR. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. I do want to just say at the top of the show, this is a show about pop culture and TV, and comic books have always been a large part of my life, so I just wanted to give an RIP out there to Stan Lee, who passed away today. The dude was 95 years old. He lived it right. He had a great life. He created so many great stories and characters that have become a part of our culture. And, you know, when you look into it, he really did it because he believed in, like, truth and justice. And really, he was a businessman, and he always admits that. And I've always liked the way he talks openly about, you know, we needed a character to do this, so we created it. But there was always a joy in what they created. And obviously comic books have become this huge thing. And this could have been happening at a time when they were not a huge thing, right? And still, people hopefully would be appreciative of a guy who gave a lot to all of us and created a lot of great characters and a lot of great stories and did it really from his perspective, coming out of a generation of World War II and where there was bad guys, the Nazis, you know, and that was a lot of what I think fueled where he was coming from. The ideas of freedom and being Jewish himself and just basically wanting to espouse that type of mentality to the world, believe in peace and justice and love and caring about other human beings. So I just wanted to start out the show with a shout out to Stan Lee. And, but you can't be too sad when somebody dies when they're 95. I just got to put that out there. I mean, the dude lived a life, right? So come on. I hope I live to 95 and live the kind of life he lived. I'm 45. I have not, how old am I? 44. And I haven't lived that life. So anyway, shout out to you, Stan Lee. Rock on, brother. All right. Well, I do want to welcome you to the show. You can check us out at dvrpodcast.com. You can become a patron at patreon.com/DVR, talking about the business side. You can also email us, dvrpodcast@gmail.com. And if you do that, you will be entered into our contest on Wednesday. We'll be giving away an awesome Mickey Mouse pin from Cufflinks. Yeah, baby. It is super cool to celebrate Mickey's 90th birthday. So go ahead and do that. All you need to do is email us. I just want to hear from people. I also want to say a very special thank you to Tom. tompatrick.co.uk. Check him out. Hire him. He's an awesome graphic designer, and he designed the new logo for our show, our new podcast picture. I call it the logo. The art is what it really is, because it is art, and it speaks to what I talk about, what we're trying to do on this show and TV, and it's got the flashback VHS look to it. And it's really fantastic, and I really appreciate the time and effort that Tom did and just whipped that out. And he gave us two of them, and I let the patrons decide. And at some point, you'll see the other one, because it was just as awesome. And I'm really excited about it. So a heartfelt thank you to you, Tom. I really do appreciate your work. And everyone, go check him out. Check out his website, tompatrick.co.uk. He does excellent work and just so easy to work with. I even did like this drawer. I like drew it out and I was like, kind of like this, I think. And he went with it and it was bam, blammo. First time. He also, of course, did the DVR logo and the Westworld TheoryCast logo. So Tom is the man. Thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate your work, and I'm just really happy and proud to have that. And everyone I've showed it to has been like, whoa, that is awesome, man. It just looks fantastic. All right, let's move on with the show. I had a fantastic weekend with my son. It was kind of a dad and son weekend, and we put together some Gundam and had some friends over, and then we started putting together the R2-D2 and BB-8 Bandai model. It's really fun, and that was, he did such a great job, man. I can't believe the work that he can do at 6 years old, but it's really been a fun weekend, so I'm raring to go. We've got a lot of news today. I do want to start out with a little feedback from Brett. I got some other feedback that I'm going to save. I'll read some of it tomorrow, some of it Wednesday, along with the Contestio announcement, but Brett did have a point here that I wanted to make. He says, since I'm not an Apple user, I've drifted to Stitcher as my Android podcast app of choice, except for the Patreon feed, which I use Podcast Republic. Thank you, Brett, for being a patron. I love your new logo. Yeah. And wanted to check out how it looked on my list of pods and noticed that the last episode it shows is Wednesday on Stitcher with the old logo. I noticed sometimes episodes are slow to show up and then multiple appear at once. I'm not sure if there's anything you can do on your end, but just want to mention it. Maybe it's just a downside to using Stitcher. I think I may have mentioned that on another show. I'm not sure. I may have mixed it up, but some of them are later than others. You know, iTunes is still the best. Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever you call it. I put it up. It's up within 5 seconds, 5 minutes. I mean, sometimes it's like I literally hit the button and before I can even get to my phone, boom, it's there. I can't remember the last time it wasn't when I looked. So I can't even tell you how fast it's there. And then some people's feed off them. So I'm pretty sure that Stitcher actually, what it does is it has some kind of API, whatever. I don't understand computers as much as I probably think I do. And it trawls, like it hits up Apple every once in a while and it gets their down. It somehow links through them when it appears on iTunes. I'm not sure how that works, but anyway, yeah, Stitcher is usually late. So that is the point. Try Acast, Podcast Addict. I love Acast. Acast is really cool. Let's see what another one that I would, I don't know. I guess I'd probably say Podcast Addict or Acast. I don't want to make you switch, brother, but or else it's just going to be a little late. There's nothing I can do on my end. A lot of people say this about Stitcher and it happened. And I've actually, so Westworld TheoryCast, Podcast Winterfell and Daily DVR all are served differently to Stitcher because of the way they were set up and they all take a day to appear. So I'll try to reboot somehow with Stitcher or send them an email. You're giving me that impetus, Brett. Now that I'm getting to the bottom of it, I like want to say there's nothing I can do about it, but I'm thinking to myself, there's something you can do about it. So we'll see. All right. Well, thank you, Brett. I appreciate that. And let's get into some news. So I already talked about Stan Lee. You know, what a life. But there is other news here. And that news is about things that are happening in the future now. And this news came out over the weekend that Michelle Yeoh from Crazy Rich Asians and, a ton of other things, that was most recently, is in talks to reprise her Star Trek Discovery role to lead an upcoming spinoff series based about her character on CBS All Access. Now, obviously, we've been talking about Disney service, talk a lot about Netflix, and I've made fun of CBS All Access, okay? I've made fun of them. They are kind of like, what are they doing? Now, they're doing the Picard series. I mean, that's Patrick Stewart. I love it. They're doing this series. Michelle Yeoh is a great actress. She's been in innumerable films that I've seen. But she was in, okay, spoiler, I guess I can't talk about this without talking about spoilers. So quick spoilers for start. Okay, I'll talk about it without talking about spoilers, okay? Let's just say this. It was not the best character in the world. It was an interesting character, and it leaves open the possibilities of interesting stories and divergent stories within the Star Trek universes. But this is a little bit like the Diego Luna Cassian Star Wars one. They both feel a little bit like, let's check everyone's schedule and see who's available. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to be good, because I'm a fan of a limited series, okay? And if they're going to do 6-8 episodes for a streaming, if it's great, they do another one. If not, if it's okay, or if it doesn't work out, they just did one, that's cool. They have it in their service now. They have the content. But it's a little suspect to me. I have to be honest with you, okay? It's a little suspect. I mean, it's very early stages, you know, so they don't know who is going to do it, but, you know, I don't know. I'm a little suspect, okay? But I'm going to give them credit, okay? That just like I wanted to give AMC credit. I love being able to do this show every day because I get to kind of check what's happening and feel the pulse of what's going on in TV. And AMC, even when I started the show 2 months ago, I was like, come on, AMC, what are you doing? And who the hell would even pay for this streaming service? Now they're doing movies. They're going actually back to their core idea, American Movie Channel. Remember when AMC was a movie place? It was kind of like a cable alternative to HBO or so. They tried to do that, and they tried to show a lot of action movies or older films. They had themed weeks. Remember, that's what AMC was. Now with these movies, Breaking Bad movies they're going to make, they're making the Walking Dead movies. There was some talk I heard, and the guys on The Watch, Andy and Chris, were talking about, oh, do you think they'll get Matthew Weiner to come and do movies for Mad Men, since the Romanoffs isn't really working out that great on Amazon? I don't know that it's not working out that great. I think the Romanoffs is, I only seen one episode, but I'm waiting to watch them, but I want to see them, and they look awesome, and he's a singular talent. But that's cool. I give them props. CBS, okay, you're trying to do the kind of Marvel Disney thing. We're going to just announce a bunch of different, that's cool. But I mean, in all of the Star Trek universe, that's Picard is, yes, number uno. You got me. But this is what you come up with second? I mean, I know you want to tie it into, but the first season was kind of a mess. I mean, it was good, but it was, you had two different showrunners, and I don't know. All right, now on to more CBS All Access news. Now, I mentioned Michael Chabon on Friday because they are doing a film with Will Ferrell Will Farrell, I'm having bad pronunciation problems today, about his son going to Fashion Week. And now, because of that, there was an interview here. They had a bit on Dark Horizons. He also wrote Wonder Boys, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. He's an author, as well as stuff of his has been made into films and TV, but he has never written for film and TV. But this week, he makes his television writing debut with Short Treks, Calypso. So it's the short. Now I got to get the trial for CBS All Access, because this is why I'm coming to this next after talking about the Michelle Yeoh news, which is that this is one of those four short films tied into Star Trek Discovery that they announced about a month, 2 months ago that they were going to release. And I kind of made fun of it. I was like, you're going to release like four short films. And meanwhile, Disney's bringing back Loki, you know what I mean? And Winter Soldier. So, but this actually maybe sounds kind of interesting. So Chabon wrote it and it premieres this week. And it's a story set in a millennia post-Discovery when a soldier, Aldis Hodge, who is an actor that I like, actually, awakens on an abandoned starship run by the ship's computer, which has evolved after centuries of isolation into a unique personality, AI. So that's interesting. It's his first foray into writing for Star Trek, and he's also going to write for the Jean-Luc Picard story, the new series coming out. So he doesn't really say much about it, except that he's excited to work on a Picard series. But this is a little bit interesting. Captain Picard, this is a quote. Captain Picard is the hero we need right now. He exemplifies in some ways even more than James Kirk. And I'm not going to get into the Kirk versus Picard argument because I love Captain Kirk. He was my first captain. Picard's better. But Picard is even more of an exemplar of everything that is best about Star Trek's vision for the future. And he wasn't such a hound dog as Captain Kirk. Picard was infinitely more sexy and cool than Captain Kirk was. That's just the way I feel, people. I'm sorry. I was never a fan of Kirk. I grew up on Star Trek too. I always liked Spock. I like Spock and I like Bones. I got to be honest. I never liked Kirk. I always thought Kirk was a joke. And then that's just who I am. I'm sorry. I got to admit it. And I'm true blue Star Trek, yo. I watch Star Trek from the get when I was available to be watching it as a human. In 1975 or whatever, I think as a baby, I was watching Star Trek. I've seen all those originals so many times, but I like Kirk, I get it, but you know, Picard, I totally got suckered into that argument. But anyway, I think that I really liked the way that he described that, because this really is the first inclination we have of what this story might be. A lot of people have been saying, oh, you know, Picard at a wine, you know, at his winery, drinking wine, you know, just hanging out. But this is interesting. They're setting this up. Perhaps it's going to be that Picard has to kind of revitalize the Federation or something, you know? I think that that would be pretty cool. And that would be an interesting story if he's trying to kind of tie it into the hero we need now, into today's society where people have lost trust and faith in the government and all that, and you need a hero, you know, that kind of story. So that actually sounded kind of cool. I like it. I really like that idea. And this guy is a great writer. So you know what? Here I go. Maybe I'm down with this. CBS All Access could surprise me. Justin, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones instead of streaming tomorrow. Not tomorrow, on Wednesday. But we will talk about streaming at some point. But it does beg to answer. I mean, how much money can you really spend? You know, I mean, I'm excited about watching some of this stuff, but I kind of hope at some point it pops up on Netflix. All right, I wanted to give a shout out to nonfix.com. That's nonfics.com, nonfix.com. I'm a fan of this site, and I have been for a long time. It delves into documentaries, and I almost said democracies, documentaries. And actually, if I remember correctly, this site was originally the blog for the documentary channel. Do you all remember the documentary channel? Sadly, I do. I love the documentary channel, but it went away. And this guy, Christopher Campbell, who I've also followed on Twitter for a long period of time, was a writer for that blog. And I think this site somehow came about a part of it or because of it. But anyway, it's all about documentaries. And they have a great, every month they do something, and usually Chris writes it. 100 must-see documentaries streaming on Amazon this November. And it brings up that The Last Waltz is on Amazon now. I think I mentioned that when it came on. The band, it's awesome. Tales of the Grim Sleeper, which was really one of the best Nick Broomfield docs, is great. Alexander McQueen bio, McQueen, a very fun ventriloquism documentary, Her Master's Voice, American Commune, went off, which is, I like that one. He talks about some of the stuff that went off. So it's just a lot of great docs that are on Amazon Prime, and check these out. Now, of course, these are available in the United States. This guy is from the U.S. I'm just taking a look at this cool picture of Dylan and Robbie Robertson. They're looking pretty awesome. Dylan did look pretty cool back in the day. Look at them. Those jeans. Faded jeans. But anyway, check that out. And I'll include a link to this in the show notes. All right. This is a really interesting story. Ruth Wilson plays her own grandmother in true spy story, Mrs. Wilson. All right, so this is a mini series that is going to air in the UK, and it'll probably end up somewhere here in the US. It doesn't say in this article here. I was originally reading from the Mary Sue, and basically, so it turns out that, okay, it's a co-production with the BBC. And it's going to air on Masterpiece in PBS in 2019. So it'll air here in the US. So the drama follows Allison Wilson, Ruth Wilson, who is playing her own grandmother, who thinks she is happily married into her husband, popular spy novelist Alec Wilson, played by Ian Glenn, Game of Thrones, dies, and a woman turns up on the doorstep claiming to be Alec's wife. Allison is determined to prove the validity of her own marriage and Alec's love for her, but is instead led into a world of disturbing events and secrets. All right, so I just thought that that was kind of cool that she's playing her own grandmother, and didn't Kit Harington play his own great-great-grandfather for an HBO movie? Very cool. Now, it reminds me that they totally messed up when they didn't let Heath Solo play his own grandfather, who is on that ship that I can never remember the name of, and Solo's going to be yelling at me. But, I think it was the Indianapolis. Remember that story? And the sharks came and everything. Heath's grandfather was on that ship, and he auditioned, and they didn't cast him. And I was like, what are you, out of your minds? You get a story. Give the guy the part. It's Heath Solo. Anyway, I thought that was kind of neat. All right, this is also neat. Netflix. I love this. This is what I was talking about the other... Remember just a couple weeks ago, I was talking about when HBO showed E.T. on Christmas? Well, Netflix is giving us all a Christmas present. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, A Midwinter's Tale, will premiere on December 14th and will focus on Church of Night's annual celebration of the winter solstice. So they're giving you like a special one-off episode of Sabrina on Netflix for like a Christmas, like a special like they do in the UK, right? They do like the Christmas episode, the holiday episode. I like it. All right, I thought this was pretty fun. the first trailer for Detective Pikachu came out. Now, when they first announced that they're going to make this Pokemon movie, Pikachu, I was like, this is going to be dumb. But then, of course, they went out, they get Ryan Reynolds to do the voice. I watched the trailer. It actually looks pretty funny. My kid's going to like it. I mean, it's not a movie for adults. It's a movie for kids. And you know what? It looks like they actually put some inventiveness into it. It's like you're already in the world of Pokemon and the kid can hear, I guess it's Ash, I'm not quite sure, can like hear Pikachu and the kid, Justice Smith, who I don't think that he's Will Smith's kid. I'm not sure because I'm not up with Jaden and Justice and it. I'm not quite sure, but I've seen this kid before. He was in something else and I really liked him. I thought he was a good actor. And this looks kind of fun, and the CGI is good, and it looks like a weird world. And it comes out May 11, 2019. The trailer dropped today. I thought it was kind of fun. And I showed it to Lachlan. He was like, oh, what's that? Oh, wow, what's that? That's cool. So he really dug it. So I said, why not talk about it on the show? Detective Pikachu. Now, to adult fare. Roma release limited by tech demands. So Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, which Netflix financed, it already had fantastic reviews at all the film festivals. People love it. It's supposed to be amazing. But people were, there was a big kerfuffle, right? Because it's Netflix. It's going to be released on Netflix. It's not going to be released in theaters. So then they want to get it released in theaters. So what happens? Business Insider reports that chains like Alamo Drafthouse, among others, are passing on the option of showing the film despite its critical acclaim and strong Oscar chances. The reason? The company is asking some pretty high demands for certain theaters to show the film, including only in cinemas with Dolby Atmos, and if they have one, only in cinemas 70mm theater with an exclusive 4-week engagement. So, I'm not going to get into the specifics of this because who knows about this story, but in general, it brings up the idea of the whole idea of how strict people want to see films in theaters, and there are people who are purists, and they say you've got to see it on a big screen in a theater with people, communal event, big sound, big color, big light. That's the way films are meant to be seen. Now, does that include the general theater where everybody's looking at their phone and, you know? No. So you want to make it the perfect theater. But in order to make it the perfect theater, it costs more money. You got to charge more for the ticket. You have to have a special limited run theater. You got to be like Alamo Drafthouse and throw people out if they talk or look at their phone. So it's just theater business in flux. At the same time, it's making more money than it ever did. Last year, it made more money, even though they always say, oh, people aren't going to the movies. People go to the movies. It costs so much more money. You're still paying for popcorn. You know, it's just an interesting, it's just interesting to me. I don't really have an opinion either way. I am all for theater. I love seeing a film in a theater. I don't go as much because I only want to go to special theaters, and quite honestly, I get very, very distracted by people looking at their phone, talking, whatever, in a theater. So a lot of times I watch movies at home. But it's interesting that they want to get this movie out there, but the thing stopping it is its own kind of artistic merits, right? Like the art, is the art the film itself or the way it's shown, right? The medium, what is the art and what is the artifice? There is no doubt that there's a feeling you have as a human being, right? If you look into things like sensory deprivation tanks and things of that nature, being in a theater with that much sound, that much that big an image in front of you has an effect on your brain. There's a scientific effect, being with other people, communal experience. There's an actual like demonstrative demonstrable scientific effect that it has on you. As far as, you know, your blood pressure to endorphins and hormone, whatever, all that kind of stuff, right? But it also costs a lot of money and you want to do it right. And is there a difference between that and doing it right? So it's something maybe Justin and I should talk about one time, but I thought that was interesting. All right, the next piece of news, I'm going to roll right into our middle break ad for cufflinks.com, baby. And that's this. Lachlan and I sat down and we watched the trailer for the new Disney film, Toy Story 4. Now, I got to tell you, I am a Toy Story fan. I'm not a huge, like, crazy, I know everything about Toy Story or Disney fan. I got to admit, I'm not that big of a fan. But the damn movies make me cry every time. Every time the first one, of course, I remember when I was in college when it came out, but I remember seeing it with my little brother, Ryan. And this has heart. The second one came out, people complaining, oh, it's not good. I saw it. It still had heart. Then the third one, the third one, I think, was the best one. That had me like, I'm like, my wife, I think, was like laughing at me at how much I was crying. Lachlan loves it. So we sat down, we watched it. It's just a little goofy trailer, right? You have like a do-do-do-do-do, like the six, like the song. They're all together holding hands. You see Woody and you see the Potato Man and Buzz and everybody, right? And then there's this little guy and he's like a fork. A fork that some kid made. And he's like, I don't belong here. Which I thought was kind of, because Lachlan and I are makers, we like to build stuff. And like, you know, I build robots out of cardboard boxes for him. And I just undid all of our Gundam box. I spent almost all day Saturday sitting crisscross applesauce, undoing my Gundam boxes, breaking them at the seams so we could retape them and create shadow boxes, because he paints in the bottom of the box. And then we create a shadow box and you can put it on the wall. He can give it to his friends. So it's kind of a little like, I always try to create. So I thought it was neat that the Toy Story thing is getting into it, of that idea of like a kid making a toy and it becoming alive and a part of what they did. The kid made the toy. And all, then I started to get teary-eyed and, oh man. So anyway, Cufflinks, of course, is celebrating Mickey's 90th birthday this month. You can use the code Disney30 to get 30% off all Disney stuff at cufflinks.com. And you know what else? I'll tell you something. They do have Toy Story stuff. Of course they did. And they have awesome. It is so cool. I'm looking at it right now. It's Buzz and Woody cufflinks. They also have a great tie, a Toy Story Boys zipper tie. And you can get 30% off. Actually, the Woody and Buzz Lightyear cufflinks are on sale for $54.99 right now. The ties for $11.99. Go check it out. But you can check out all the Disney products. Use the code Disney30 to get 30% off all Disney products all November long in celebration of Mickey's birthday on November 18th. So check that out again, cufflinks.com. And Toy Story 4, that really looks good. There was a part of me that didn't want to like it. I don't know why, you know, it's more of this, but then there is heart behind it. And it really is kind of funny. And the character's name is Forky. And Forky is played by Tony Hale from Veep. So many Arrested Development. He's amazing, Tony Hale. But it's just a really funny trailer. And it looks amazing. Of course. Of course it looks amazing. All right. That was my ad for Cufflinks. And I intertwined it with news. Come on, people. You can't ask for better than that. That was seamless. Seamless. Of course, I had to mention it, but that's podcasting for you. All right, so we're going to move on. I have a few Let's see. Do we want to check? Let's do ourselves. Let's jump on into the Metacritic calendar. I don't really think that there's much premiering or much that came on. Mondays are usually pretty slow for the Metacritic and as well as for the Just Watch. Not a lot usually premieres on a Monday, but let's see what's going on. We've really slowed down as far as premieres go. Yeah, there's not really much. Not really much at all. This show Mars is back. Has anyone watched this on Nat Geo? It's like a drama, sci-fi documentary. It's like they're doing a trip to Mars, and as they're doing a dramatic representation of it in kind of documentary style, or I guess it's not a mockumentary, it's faux-umentary, they have people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, other scientists, talk about it as how it could happen. So it's like half educational, half drama documentary. It's strange. I tried watching like the first episode and I thought it was okay, but I didn't know what to attach myself to. Like the science part, it was tonally off. I wonder if anybody checked it out, because actually it gets good ratings and people seem to like it. So, you know, I don't know. What do people think? Let's see. There is a film coming out. Oh, this is what this is. Okay, this HBO doc that premieres tonight. I've been waiting for this because Jerry Saltz has been talking about this a lot on Twitter. It's called The Price of Everything. With unprecedented access to pivotal artists and the white-hot market surrounding them, this film delves deep into the contemporary art world, holding a funhouse mirror up to our values and our times, where everything can be bought and sold. Nathaniel Kahn. What else has Nathaniel Kahn directed? I'm gonna keep on talking. Oh, My Architect. That was good. That was about his dad. Okay, so this is his follow-up? I gather he probably was doing a lot of commercial work or TV work. But My Architect was a good documentary, 2003. He's had to have done more since then, but I'm not going to look it up now. But this looks really interesting. I love art world stuff. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Art documentaries are my thing. I love them. And this is fun when they talk about the art world and how, gosh, man, it is tough. Being a little bit around it in New York, it's such a strange world. So I'm going to be very much looking forward to seeing this. That is pretty cool. Now I'm excited. I am excited now. I'm going to watch that tonight. That's really all that's premiering tonight. Not much on. Actually, Mondays are kind of a dead day. Not much on the streaming front either. Have a new season of My Little Pony on Netflix. And I know Lachlan's going to want to watch that. And, okay, not much on Netflix today, except for a movie that you all should watch. It was on Amazon. Now it's on Netflix. Green Room. Please, 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 if you have not seen this film, prepare yourself and go see it. A punk rock band becomes trapped in a secluded venue after finding a scene of violence. That's all I'm going to say. Patrick Stewart, Anton Yelchin, Imogene Potts, Elias Shaukat from Arrested Development. This is a great Mark Webber, Macon Blair. This is a great, great, great film. Jeremy Saulnier, great director. You've got to see it. It is the scary. People ask me, what's the scariest movie you've ever seen? I say, well, let's see. The Howling, like I talked about. And then what did I say? Green Room. This movie is frightening as hell, but it is so awesome. It is heart pounding, Fantastic stuff. On Hulu, The Wolf Pack. Remember that documentary about those kids who were living in that New York apartment and never left and just recreated films their whole lives? Go check that out. That's kind of fun. And let's see. A couple little weird things. A little comedy. Fear, Love, and Agoraphobia on Netflix. Just said an agoraphobic man and a female Marine become emotionally entangled as they struggle to escape from their personal prisons. A lot of movies like this on Amazon. This was probably at Sundance. Who knows? Maybe it would be good. But that's it. That's all I got. So we're going to jump in, and we are going to talk about... I watched two movies over the weekend. I'm going to give you some quick reviews, and then I'm going to jump into... Jenny has awesome feedback, and I have some notes as well on the finale of The Mayans. So let's go ahead and do that. Now, I told you on Friday, I said, look, Netflix has a new season of Spirit Riding Free. This cartoon about a young girl comes to a town in the old, kind of the old West. I guess it's like the early 1900s, the 1800s, mid-1800s or something. I don't know. It's not told. And she learns to ride a horse and she goes on adventures with her friends. I was like, my son, I think, loves this show. Okay, so I talked to Lachlan over the weekend. I said, hey, Lach, there's a new season of Spirit Riding Free. He goes, yeah, I know. I watched the whole thing already. I love that show. I was like, really? He's like, Dad, okay. Don't make fun of me. Let's watch the show. And I said, what do you mean don't make fun of you? Let's watch it. Now, he's in kindergarten now. So for really the first time, there's this thing that happens where it's girls and boys, you know? He never really cared before. I mean, he's a brony. My wife and I don't focus on that. This is boy stuff. He likes what he likes. Now, generally, he is a rough and tumble boy and he likes a lot of fighting and, you know, power, but he loves Spirit Riding Free. He loves My Little Pony. He loves all these other shows, a lot of shows that are more, I guess, female focused. And, so he's a little embarrassed. So I turn on, I say, let's start from the beginning, though, Locke, because I haven't seen any of it. He goes, okay. So we watched the first episode. As soon as I hit play and the theme song comes on, he just smiles and he closes his eyes and he starts singing, we're riding free, spirit riding free, like this song. And he's like holding his hands in there. It's like he was at church or something, okay? It was like gospel music to him. And then he looks at me, face gets kind of red, and I just start singing with him. We ended up watching Spirit Riding Free like 3 nights in a row. I let him stay up late. I actually woke him up last night and we watched an episode of Spirit Riding Free because he likes it when I wake him up at 11 o'clock at night. He's like, oh, I'm up so late. You know, he looks outside. Look at the moon. Oh, it's so dark. Oh my God, where's the cars? So we watch his show. And I have to say, I know some listeners out there have younger kids. This is more like, I'd say kindergarten, a little younger, maybe 5 or so. But this is a really good show. It really is a good show. It's a DreamWorks show. It's about this young girl, Lucky. She moves to this new town, like I said. It's like the Old West, the plains, you know, little house on the prairie kind of thing. She goes to school in the old red schoolhouse. Yet it's like they talk kind of like kids today. It's kind of like they don't really, the oldie timey stuff is not really a part of the show. Okay. It's obvious, it's very multicultural and there's not really too much of a mention of that, you know, regardless of the time period. She's just a young girl who wants to fit in, right? And her dad, there's like this whole, Lachlan, of course, spoiled the show for me. And like, there's all this stuff that happens. But it's a cute show. We've been watching it. If you have a kid, check it out. You know somebody with a kid, young girl or boy, spirit riding free. They go, it's adventure based. Okay. It's not like there's a bad kid. Sometimes there is a kid who doesn't act right, but they always confront them and talk about it. It's not adversarial. It's adventure and learning based. So spirit riding free. All right. Two other movies I watched since my wife was out of town. I had the nights to myself. I watched BlacKkKlansman and Sorry to Bother You. Two films having to do a lot with modern culture, political, society, race relations, of course, BlacKkKlansman. BlacKkKlansman, unfortunately, I must report, was not very good. I love Spike Lee. I've loved Spike Lee since She's Gotta Have It. I've loved Spike Lee since, oh gosh, what was the name of his original short? Somebody's Barbershop, We Cut Heads. I love that short, okay? I met Spike Lee once in New York. My dad got me into an Apple event where he was speaking, and I shook his hand. And I looked him in the eye and I said, you are a genius, and you have changed my life, and you never know how much you mean to me, man, seriously. And he was like, thank you so much. Very cool. Then he had to move on. Well, you know, then he moved on. But anyway, I got to say that to Spike Lee. I love Spike Lee. Malcolm X is one of my favorite films of all time. I will say it now and I'll say it again. When Malcolm meets Shorty again and they show it, and Spike shows it from both angles, it was one of the most important moments in my life as a filmmaker, as a film lover. It just taught me what editing was. And I had been editing up to that point, but it really taught me what editing was, what it meant to edit. And what film was that one moment. But anyway, this is not a great movie. It wasn't Spike's movie. It was a story that actually Jordan Peele wanted to tell. And this is his movie. Jordan Peele is the one who got this movie financed. He went out and he got Spike Lee to direct it. So I love everything about that, because nobody wants to hire Spike Lee anymore. And he's like David Lynch. Like, you can only go back and do what he did already, right? Netflix will give him money to make a She's Gotta Have It series because people watched She's Gotta Have It on Netflix or similar titles. And the algorithm told them that. But, you know, it was a chance for Spike to get out there and direct something. And I watch a little of the behind the scenes featurette on it. And, speaking of Malcolm, Denzel's son is decent in it. I like him, but it's just Adam Driver is good. It's a fun movie, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense. I have to admit to you, I don't understand why it's called BlacKkKlansman. The whole conceit of the film is that the black guy calls the Klan and pretends he's white, but then they send the white guy to pretend he's him when they meet. Why didn't they just have the white guy call? Because it wasn't his case, but then they could have handed it off to him. It didn't make any sense. And then it didn't make any sense why they were investigating until you got farther into the film. And you're like, okay, I mean, like, the Klan is terrible and they should always be investigating and keeping watch of terrorist organizations. But why? What was he just called them on the phone? It was like the tone was weird. Like, the first half of it was almost like a Coen Brothers movie. And it was funny because Spike Lee is funny as hell. But then it became more serious. And then, of course, it has to have Spike's patented mix of file footage with contemporary plus scenes from the film equals things haven't changed. And I love that. I love it. But it was good back in Malcolm X, but you did it like 8 times since. And it's, you know, it does have the patented also Spike people on the dolly being pushed, shot. I love that shot. I think he should always do it. And it was used to good effect in the film. It just wasn't a good movie. It just didn't work. It could have been, I don't know what they could have done to make it work. Actually, I'm not quite sure. It was just weird. But I still kind of liked it. But it wasn't a great movie. Moving on. Sorry to Bother You. Directed by Boots Riley. He has been in the music scene and the art scene and the political scene and the culture for a long time. Interesting dude. This movie was okay. Is it wrong to say that it was predictably weird? Because that's a thing now. It is. The movie was predictably weird. I knew exactly where it was going. And it went places so quickly, like characters just whooshed, changed. And that happens in real life. I'm not always against that, but it was like they were getting somewhere. Like he had an idea where this movie, if you watch the first 5 minutes of the movie, you could guess exactly where it's going to end. Not to say that the acting wasn't good. Lakeith Stanfield, Tessa Thompson, Armie Hammer is even in it. It's interesting, weird movie, but it's kind of trying to say too much. And kind of the conceit of this film is he's a telemarketer, which I was a telemarketer for years. I could be a telemarketer today, but I don't want to do it anymore. Oh my, I can't do it anymore, telemarketing. But man, I killed it selling, re-upping people for the Star Ledger. Holy cow. I was in college and I made so much Sears gift certificates. I bought a stereo system. I bought clothes for years. I was Sears outfitted me, man. I think I bought a lawnmower later for my mom. I killed it. Anyway, that film was kind of all over the place. I liked what it was trying to say. Tessa Thompson, I love her. I think I might be in love with her. I might have a little crush. Don't tell my wife. But it was not great either. It was not great either. Just kind of predictably weird. Like I knew exactly where it was going. I don't know. Just overall, I thought that this film was coming from a good place. A lot of good people. Very interesting world that it existed in. It does create its own kind of world similar to what we discussed with like Maniac, kind of a alternate America, but still maybe more America than America really is even. But overall, I would have to give this a thumbs equal. Like I don't know. I'm just neutral on it. Love what it's about. Love everyone involved. But overall, the film just didn't work for me. So I can't say that it's like really worth watching with everything there is to see in this world. All right. Well, we got a packed show today. And I am going to finish it up by diving deep into Mayans. Now, this is the finale of the Mayans, season one. This is episode 10. I want to start by thanking Jenny. Jenny, you are my Mayans rock. I'm riding through this world. I'm not all alone. I'm not all alone. I got you. I know I got Solo too. I talked to Solo and he said that he's been saving the Mayans so he can binge it and then we can do a podcast about it. So you're going to hear more about Mayans, Jenny. So if you have any further thoughts, don't hesitate because Heath and I at one point will talk about the Mayans. And I've really enjoyed being able to cover, I think I missed one episode, but I've really been able to enjoy covering the Mayans on the show. I hope people have been listening. I'm not sure who else is into the Mayans. It gets good ratings, but I haven't seen a ton about it out there in the world, in the Twittersphere or anything like that. So I did just want to say thank you to Jenny. And I just wanted to say thanks, everyone, for being on this journey. So Jenny did a really good job of recapping this episode. So I'm going to go through her notes and then I'm going to add my own and I have stuff to say about this episode. first. All right. So, first off, I want to say my first feelings. I thought that this episode, I was happy that some things got wrapped up. And I was happy that it seemed to lead us into season two. But they got wrapped up kind of quick. And Jenny agrees with me on that too. There was so much. It was so fast. The episodes were at 90 minutes each. Jenny, I'm going to get into Jenny's notes anyway. She said, I enjoyed the first season of Minds, but as we've discussed, there were some issues. There was too much too fast. The episodes were too long. Maybe they could have done 12 to 13 hour long episodes instead of 10 90 minute shows. Do you think that might have helped with the too much part? There are several things that I'm just not sure what the purpose of some of the extra plots were. Why so much Chucky? Yeah, there was... I'll do a little intro, then we'll get into the show. But my feelings exactly, Jenny. Overall, I wish that I could do this review super pumped, like I've done other SOA reviews and some episodes of the Mayans. But overall, I'm definitely going to stick with Mayans for season two. I like the world. I know it's already renewed. I have faith in Kurt Sutter. But overall, Jenny, we're in the same exact place. I just feel like this was so much. And even as like I have a plan for the episode, and I'm going to go through the notes. I'm even thinking like, can I read all of this? Because even this, and it's not what you wrote, Jenny, or what I wrote too. It's just so much happens in these episodes. Okay, so you noticed like I did that we start off with Easy riding up, and I wish there was more people riding motorcycles. And we see the Raven, which is the name of this episode. Okay, Cuervo means raven in Spanish. I didn't know that that's what it meant either. And that's my tequila too. So the Raven is eating the dog from the dog episode. Okay, so what happened in the dog episode? I don't particularly remember, but I think that the dog episode was about his cousin. So the dog, Raven eating the dog, who is the Raven? I think in the end, maybe Easy is kind of the Raven. But I want to go back, and I know somebody's going to write an article about it. I've been reading some different, getting into reading some different articles about the Mayans this season. And I'm going to, the mystery of these animals is I think we kind of figured it out as it went along. Some of them are based more directly on plot points. Some of them more on characters, okay? So they're thematic as well as representative. And I liked that it started like that. And that's the feeling I got, that dog was like his cousin, the FBI, the past maybe, the cops, kind of Easy letting go of all of that and now finding a purpose, which as we see at the end of the episode, he finds a new purpose, okay? Easy visits Felipe and tells him that Potter wants him to kill his cousin. Felipe tries to convince him not to do it. Easy is at a loss for what else he can do. This whole thing was so inevitable, right? They tried to have a couple scenes where Felipe was going to kill him, and then he couldn't do it. And now you just knew that the brothers were going to end up committing this act in this world. And actually, I thought that that was pretty interesting writing. I thought that they did this pretty good. Easy goes to the club, gets told to get meat for a party from his dad. That was a whole truck's worth of meat. And to pick up Marcus's things. I didn't catch that. Of course, this picking up Marcus's things appears to actually mean something by the end of the episode, right? Marcus and the table talk about the new relationship with Galindo and the rebels. Sam Crow is brought up as being able to take care of supplying the cartel, and Marcus mentions keeping his promise to Jax. I like that. And I like that they did that in this episode, that they said, okay, we need a table scene. So everybody get, and the fun thing about that I did like about this episode is so much of it was Easy and Angel and the killing of the cousin and meeting with Lincoln and burying the cousin and visiting Felipe. That was most of the episode for them. And I like that journey. And I like that they did some of these scenes where they tied up the loose ends and explain what the fuck happened this whole crazy season. Okay. Because what did happen? Now they laid it out that Galindo's going to pretend like he's working with the DEA, but he's really going to get the guns and stuff from Sam Crow, so Sam Crow can actually profit more and be out of the way of the government. The government's not even going to be looking at them because they think that they're working with the cartel. And they're going. And then, meanwhile, the cartel or Miguel has the rebels that he's going to use on the ground. And who's he bringing in to work with that person now? It looks like Marcus leaves the Mayans. Does that mean that Bishop is the head now? Who knows? Hopefully it means that Angel's going to move up or Easy gets to the table because I want them to be a part of the big crew. Interesting, interesting stuff. Mayan's water break, baby, live on the show. Easy's driving the van. He sees Emily and gets startled and has a flashback of having sex with her. Yeah. Jenny says, this whole scene is odd to me, and I still don't see how it fits into the episode, even after watching the whole thing. Me neither. I don't know how any of the Emily and Easy stuff even, it doesn't even work. They got to drop it. They either have to do it, they got to shit, or get off the pot. Right? Either give us Easy and Emily get together, and it causes a lot of trouble, or drop it. And I thought that they seem to go different ways throughout this whole season. I'm still not sure about it. I just think that they have really lost the plot with Easy and Emily. And we're going to see a course correction with that. Knowing Sutter, they're going to look at this season. They're going to correct it. They made mistakes. Felipe, too. What did it end up mattering at all? Any of his connection to the priest and to the girl and everybody just, it's like Edward James almost couldn't shoot anything that wasn't in his living room. It was very weird. Very weird. That was strange. Now this kind of was funny to me. Jenny continues. Angel shows up at the cousin's house. They kill the cousin. That was a great scene. I love that shot too of them sitting there before they cut the commercial. They need more of that. I would take, you know what? Give me some more nice shots that hold for 10 seconds and cut one extraneous scene that's 3 minutes long. Potter, they call Potter to help them after they kill the cousin, which I thought was weird. He's so amiable to them. He just makes them clean up. Then he starts eating the cake and fingering the cake, which I thought was weird too. Jenny, you mentioned this. You're like, ugh, gross. It was weird. I love that guy. He's really weird. Miguel and the braided guy talk. Yeah, his second in command. This is to set up the whole surprise that Marcus is coming over. But it's also to set up this guy to go crazy, of course. You know that's going to happen. I guess Braid's guy name is Nestor. Only took me all season to figure that out. And Miguel was not pleased about the nun. Now he says something, right? Yeah. Easy and Angel chat in the van. That was good. I liked that whole thing. I really liked these scenes with the brothers. And I liked this whole subplot. Adelita and the kids move into this house. And then the girl's scared. You're mentioning it. She doesn't understand. She doesn't believe they'll be safe. Angel goes to see Adelita. I was sure she was going to let him down, but instead she invited him to stay. His comment about not being able to stay while he hated himself so much. Angel is headed down a dark path, it looks like. Yeah, I think that's, Jenny, you picked up on that. I think that's maybe where, look at what they're doing with Angel wanting Easy out of the club and Easy instead taking, I think, Bishop as his sponsor, right? Like removing his brother from his own political kind of stance within the club. I thought that was interesting, and it goes to show that's where we're going, brother versus brother, right? That's there. That's where this has to go. And also with Angel believing that Easy doesn't have the best interest of the club at heart, right? He's kind of already said that to him. So that's interesting. Easy shows Potter the proof pics. Oh, just to finish about Adelita. What did that end up doing too? She just gave up. She made her deal with the cartel. Then she kills the stepfather of Miguel, I call him. That whole thing with Emily and Miguel's mom too was like obligatory. They've got to stop these obligatory scenes. I don't care. They don't need to be in the show. Or if they're going to be in the show, make them better. Like they did that whole subplot with Johnny Cuckoo and Cruz. And I loved it with his mom and his, but then what happened? It didn't go anywhere. It's like they just start so much stuff. It's crazy. But I like some of it. I like. So they're going to do better next season. I trust. Angel gets a promotion to secretary, right? Which should have been Easy because Easy has the insane memory. Easy approaches the table. What did Easy say at the table? And we find out what Easy said. Easy pulled a fast one on Angel by asking Bishop to sponsor him. And Marcus walks away from the Mayans. He goes to the Galindos. Jenny says, I really want to know what's going on there. So weird. It looks like he left the club. Yeah, he left the club. He left the club to be in the cartel. And maybe in some ways it shows the difference between, like in SOA, there were guys who were Sons of Anarchy and IRA, right? But originally, Sons of Anarchy were like IRA people who came to America, which was my understanding of the beginning of SOA. So it's like perhaps the Mayans see the cartels as the true like Mexican beginning, right? Like where they came from. He's not turning his back on the club. He's kind of going to the original, you know, like the original club, right? Like that's what the cartels are. The cartels, it's the same way my understanding, and I don't know much about the organized crime. I'm not like a real student of it, but isn't like the mafia in Italy really traces back to the first kind of organizations and public organizations within the towns and the cities? In the same way that don't the cartels believe that they are a continuation of the people in some way? I don't know. Or they sell themselves. I don't think that's what they are. Right. I mean, not that I don't know anything about it, to be honest with you. So I can't say. I thought I read that somewhere, that there's some kind of connection to, you know, even like the first peoples, like the, you know, of a place and these kind of underworld organizations, right? Now I think I'm explaining myself properly. So that in the same way, some people form the government and other people form the underworld, right? It's like Batman and Ra's al Ghul, right? So anyway, I thought it was kind of cool that Marcus did that. And it's kind of cool because it leaves open what can happen here. Now we get to the end of the episode. And finally, all these little flashbacks that we've been seeing the whole season, little by little, when Easy has his beautiful mind incidents, they all are showed in order, which I thought was pretty cool. Memento style. It's pretty cool. I liked it. Not that I kind of thought they telegraphed that they were doing that, which they could have more, and it would have been maybe a little bit better. Like if Easy had been talking about it, like I'm getting it, it's coming back to me, or like something like that, you know. I want to get Easy as such. It's like, who is Easy? I don't know who this character is after the whole year. He needs to have a little more life. He's just like, he kind of reminds me of the guy from American Gods. He's like a brick, you know. He had a little bit more this episode. I mean, where he said like, I've got it. You know, we harken back to the conversation with Johnny, where he's like, I've got to remember this stuff that it was my choice, you know? And that's why he does the thing with the sponsorship and everything. But anyway, we eventually see that, in fact, the person who Easy came home, he came back to his parents' deli, meat marketplace, whatever you call it, meat shop, and found his mother dead. He chased a guy. While he was chasing this guy, he started shooting at him in some abandoned warehouse area. He turned around, thought he was shooting at the guy, but instead he killed a cop. That's what sent him to jail. That's what ruined his whole life, his relationship with Emily, the deal with the DEA, being in the mines. It's all back to that. And who was the guy who he was chasing? It was Happy from SOA, from Sons of Anarchy, who was not even a B-list character on SOA, but a C-list character on SOA, but one who I always enjoyed and who was who didn't figure, unless my memory is incorrect, did not figure greatly in the SOA story. At certain times he did, he played a part, he played a role, but he was kind of like, he wasn't the craziest guy. He was kind of weird. He was troubled, if I remember correctly. And so maybe this happened, you know, this was 8 years ago. So it was actually before the events of Sons of Anarchy, because this is 2 years after the events of Sons of Anarchy. And I believe the events of Sons of Anarchy were about 5 years long. So it's like predates anything we've seen before. So in fact, that could be one of the earlier scenes. Well, nah, because we saw stuff with Gemma and all that. That was way, way back there, and Irish stuff. So anyway, though, it is, we don't know. But it's interesting. It leads us into the next season, right? It leads us into the next season. So that's the final. Let's see what Jenny says again. Let's continue what her kind of conclusion. The show would have been the same, in my opinion, if they had used some random person. They're talking about Chucky. The side plot with Coco, his mom, and Letitia could have been cut and maybe put in next season. I don't see how it added to the main storyline this season. I loved it, but I agree. You're right. That could have been the whole season. I also think Easy's memories of Emily were many times pointless, especially the weird sex scene he flashed in this episode when he saw her in the street changing the baby in the back of a van. How do those things even go together? That was weird. A baby pees on her. They actually got pee to shoot up in the air and pee on her. And then he has like, I thought that they were going to get into water sports or something, Jenny. I thought it was weird too, but I guess because it was a car or something and they were driving in a car. They're really stretching it with that stuff. Okay. They did get a lot of things tied up in the previous episode. I'm glad we finally got to see who the guy is that probably killed Easy's mom. Exactly, probably. I'll keep watching. I just hope that they tighten things up next season and stop trying to do too much too fast. I will say, though, that they've only got me invested in two or three of these characters this season. I hope it improves next season as well. All right. That's all she's got on the Mayans. She did have something to say about A Million Little Things, but I'm going to read that on tomorrow's episode, tomorrow's Patreon episode. I'm going to have stuff from Andy, DJ Tim Hines, I think a little something else from Brett, got something from Newbie and Jenny. So that's going to be a great feedback episode tomorrow. But Jenny, yeah, we feel the same way. I love the world. I love Kurt Sutter. These characters, we got to know them. Certain situations were cool and fun. The episodes were way too long. I'm in for next season, but they got to do better. They got to do better. But I believe they will. So if anyone was asking me, though, I'd say, yeah, stream it on Netflix. They're hour-long episodes, though. You know, they're not 40 minutes. But why not? Watch the first season. And I told DJ Heath Solo, I told DJ Heath Snolo, the bastard DJ mixer, to, I could have had something better there. The bastard what? What would go with DJ? I got to develop this. I told him, you got to watch it and we'll talk about it. It's worth it. And thanks, Jenny, again for your feedback. And thanks, everyone, for listening. This is a long episode. I'm going to edit this thing, get it out there in time for Brett to listen to it on his way home, hopefully. Shout out to everybody. Shout out to cufflinks.com. Thanks for the continued sponsorship. I got lots of awesome stuff to give away. And we'll give away that awesome pin on Wednesday and announce another giveaway. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to announce it. I'm just going to do it. So give me an iTunes review. Send me an email. Tweet about us. Do something. And you know what? I'm just going to give out something from cufflinks.com that has to do with Game of Thrones on Wednesday, baby, because that's what kind of mood I'm in. Thanks again for listening. DVRpodcast@gmail.com. DVRpodcast.com. Patreon.com/DVR. Check out Justin's YouTube channel, Top Shelf Fandom. Look it up. It's awesome. And he'll be with me on Wednesday. Peace out, everybody.